violating your own rule. You have waited only a little, a very short time by Martian standards, and you want to throw in the towel. You've proved that your system works for a small group, and I'm glad to confirm it. I've never seen such happy, healthy, cheerful people. That ought to be enough for the short time you've put in. Come back when you have 1,000 times this number, all working and happy and unjealous, and we'll talk it over again. Fair enough? You speak rightly, Father. I ain't through. You've been fretting that since you failed to hook 99 out of 100, the race couldn't get along without its present evils. Had to have them for weeding out, but damn it, lad, you've been doing the weeding. Or rather, the failures have been doing it by not listening to you. Had you planned to eliminate money and property? Oh, no, inside the nest we don't need it, but nor does any healthy family. But outside, you need it in dealing with other people. Sam tells me that our brothers, instead of getting unworldly, are slicker with money than ever. Right? Oh, yes. Money-making is a simple trick once you grok. You've just added a new beatitude. Blessed is the rich in spirit, for he shall make dough. How do all people stack up in other fields? Better or worse than average? Oh, better, of course. You see, Jubal, it's not a faith. The discipline is simply a method of efficient functioning in anything. You've answered yourself, son. If all you say is true, and I'm not judging. I'm asking, you're answering. Then competition, far from being eliminated, is rougher than ever. If 0.1% of the population is capable of getting the news, then all you have to do is show them. And in a matter of some generations, the stupid ones will die out, and those with your discipline will inherit the earth. Whenever that is, in 1,000 years or 10,000, we'll be soon enough to worry about some new hurdle to make them jump higher. But don't get faint-hearted because only a handful have turned into angels overnight. I never expected any to manage it. I thought you were making a damn fool of yourself by pretending to be a preacher. Mike sighed and smiled. I was beginning to be afraid I was, worrying that I had let my brothers down. I still wish you had called it cosmic halitosis or some such, but the name doesn't matter. If you've got the truth, you can demonstrate it. Talking doesn't prove it. Show people. Mike did not answer. His eyelids drooped. He held perfectly still. His face was without expression. Jubal stirred restlessly, afraid that he had said too much, crowded the lad into a need to withdraw. Then Mike's eyes opened. He grinned merrily. You've got me all squared away, Father. I'm ready to show them now. I grok the fullness. The man from Mars stood up. Waiting is ended. Chapter 37. Jubal and the man from Mars strolled into the room with the big stereo tank. The entire nest was gathered, watching it. It showed a dense and turbulent crowd, somewhat restrained by policemen. Mike glanced at it and looked serenely happy. They come. Now is the fullness. The sense of ecstatic expectancy Jubal had felt growing ever since his arrival swelled greatly, but no one moved. It's a mite big tip, sweetheart, Jill agreed. And ready to turn, added Patty.
I'd better dress for it, Mike commented.
Have I got any clothes around this dump, Patty? Right away, Michael. Jubal said,
Son, that mob looks ugly to me. Are you sure this is the time to tackle them?
Oh, sure, said Mike. They've come to see me, so now I go down to meet them.
He paused while some clothing got out of the way of his face. He was being dressed at breakneck speed with the unnecessary help of several women. Each garment seemed to know where to go and how to drape itself.
This job has obligations as well as privileges. The star has to show up for the show, grok me. The mark's expected.
Duke said,
Mike knows what he's doing, boss. Well, I don't trust mobs.
That crowd is mostly curiosity seekers. They always are. Oh, there are some Fosterites and some others with grudges, but Mike can handle any crowd. You'll see. Right, Mike?
Correct, cannibal. Pull in a tip, then give him a show.
Where's my hat? Can't walk in the noonday sun without a hat.
An expensive Panama with a sporty colored band glided out and settled itself on his head. He cocked it jauntily.
There. Do I look all right?
He was dressed in his usual outer services mufti, a smartly tailored, sharply creased white business suit, shoes to match, snowy shirt, and a luxurious dazzling scarf. Ben said,
All you lack is a briefcase.
You grok, I need one. Patty, do we have one? Jill stepped up to him. Ben was kidding, dear. You look just perfect. She straightened his tie and kissed him. And Jubal felt kissed. Go talk to them.
Yep. Time to turn the tip. Anne, Duke.
Ready, Mike. Anne was wearing her fair witness cloak, wrapping her in dignity. Duke was just the opposite, being sloppily dressed with a lighted cigarette dangling from his face, an old hat on the back of his head with a card marked press stuck in its band, and himself hung about with cameras and kit. They headed for the door to the foyer common to the four penthouse suites. Only Jubal followed. All the others, 30 and more, stayed around the stereo tank. Mike paused at the door. There was a hall table there with a pitcher of water and glasses, a dish of fruit and a fruit knife.
Better not come any farther, he advised Jubal, or Patty would have to escort you back through her pets.
Mike poured himself a glass of water, drank part of it.
Preaching is thirsty work.
He handed the glass to Anne, then took the fruit knife and sliced off a chunk of apple. It seemed to Jubal that Mike sliced off one of his fingers. But his attention was distracted as Duke passed the glass to him. Mike's hand was not bleeding, and Jubal had grown somewhat accustomed to legerdemain. He accepted the glass and took a sip, finding that his own throat was very dry. Mike gripped his arm and smiled.
Quit fretting. This will take only a few minutes. See you later, Father.
They went out through the guardian cobras, and the door closed. Jubal went back to the room where the others were, still carrying the glass. Someone took it from him he did not notice as he was watching images in the big tank. The mob seemed denser, surging about, and held back by police armed only with nightsticks. There were a few shouts, but mostly just the unlocalized muttering of the crowd. Someone said, "Where are they now, Patty?" "They've dropped down the tube. Michael is a little ahead. Duke stopped to catch Anne. They're entering the lobby. Michael's been spotted. Pictures being taken." The scene in the tank resolved into enormous head and shoulders of a brightly cheerful newscaster. "This is NWNW, New World Network's mobile newshound on the spot. While it's hot, your newscaster, happy holiday. We have just learned that the fake Messiah, sometimes known as the Man from Mars, has crawled out of his hideout in a hotel room here in beautiful St. Petersburg, the city that has everything to make you sing. Apparently Smith is about to surrender to the authorities. He crashed out of jail yesterday using high explosives smuggled into him by his fanatic followers, but the tight cordon placed around this city seems to have been too much for him. We don't know yet. I repeat, we don't know yet. So stay with the chap who covers the map. And now a word from your local sponsor who has given you this keyhole peep at the latest leap."
"Thank you, happy holiday, and all you good people watching via NWNW.
What price paradise? Amazingly low. Come out and see for yourself at Elysian Fields. Just opened as home sites for a restricted clientele. Land reclaimed from the warm waters of the glorious Gulf, and every lot guaranteed at least 18 inches above mean high water, and only a small down payment on a happy... Uh-oh, later, friends. Phone Gulf 92828. And thank you, Jick Morris and the developers of Elysian Fields. I think we've got something, folks. Yes, sir, I think we do." "They're coming out the front entrance," Patty said quietly. "The crowd hasn't spotted Michael yet." "Maybe not yet, but soon." You are now looking at the main entrance of the magnificent Sans Souci Hotel, gem of the Gulf, whose management is in no way responsible for this hunted fugitive, and who have cooperated with the authorities throughout, according to a statement just issued by Police Chief Davis. And while we're waiting to see what will happen, a few highlights in the strange career of this half-human monster raised on Mars. The live scene was replaced by quick cuts of stock shots. The envoy blasting off years earlier, the champion floating upward silently and effortlessly under Lyle Drive, Martians on Mars, the triumphant return of the champion, a quick of the first faked interview with the man from Mars.
"What do you think of the girls here on Earth?"
"Gee." A quicker shot of the conference in the Executive Palace, and the much publicized awarding of a doctorate in philosophy, all with rapid-fire commentary. "See anything, Patty?" "Michael is at the top of the steps. The crowd is at least 100 yards away, being kept off the hotel grounds. Duke has grabbed some pics, and Mike is waiting to let him change lenses. No hurry."
Happy Holiday went on as the tank shifted to the crowd, semi-close and panning.
You understand, friends, that this wonderful community is in a unique condition today. Something strange has been going on, and these people are in no mood to trifle. Their laws have been flouted. Their security forces treated with contempt. They are angry, righteously so. The fanatic followers of this alleged Antichrist have stopped at nothing to create turmoil in a futile effort to let their leader escape the closing net of justice. Anything can happen. Anything. The announcer's voice climbed. Yes, he's coming out now. He's walking toward the people. The scene cut to reverse. Mike was walking directly toward camera. Anne and Duke were behind and dropping farther behind. This is it. This is it. This is the blow-off. Mike continued to walk unhurriedly toward the crowd until he loomed up in the stereo tank in life size, as if he were in the room with his Water Brothers. He stopped on the grass verge in front of the hotel, a few feet from the crowd. You called me? He was answered with a growl. The sky held scattered clouds. At that instant, the sun came out from behind one, and a shaft of light hit him. His clothes vanished. He stood before them, a golden youth, clothed only in beauty. Beauty that made Jubal's heart ache, thinking that Michelangelo in his ancient years would have climbed down from his high scaffolding to record it for generations unborn. Mike said gently, Look at me. I am a son of man. The scene cut for a 10-second plug, a line of can-can dancers singing, Come on, ladies, do your duds in the smoothest, yummiest suds. Lover soap is kind to hands, but be sure you save the bands. The tank filled with foamy suds amid girlish laughter, and the scene cut back to newscast.
God damn you!
A half brick caught Mike in the ribs. He turned his face toward his assailant. But you yourself are God. You can damn only yourself. And you can never escape yourself.
Blasphemer!
A rock caught him over his left eye, and blood welled forth. Mike said calmly, In fighting me you fight yourself. For thou art God, and I am God, and all that grox is God. There is no other. More rocks hit him. He began to bleed in several places. Hear the truth. You need not hate, you need not fight, you need not fear. I offer you the water of life. Suddenly his hand held a tumbler of water, sparkling in sunlight. And you may share it whenever you so will, and walk in peace and love and happiness together. A rock caught the glass and shattered it. Another struck him in the mouth. Through bruised and bleeding lips he smiled at them, looking straight into the camera with an expression of yearning tenderness on his face. Some trick of sunlight and stereo formed a golden halo back of his head. Oh, my brothers, I love you so. Drink deep, share and grow closer without end. Thou art God. Jubal whispered it back to him. The scene made a 5-second cut.
Kawinga Cave, the nightclub with real Los Angeles smog imported fresh every day. 6 erotic dancers.
Lynch him, give the bastard a nigger necktie.
A heavy gauge shotgun blasted at close range, and Mike's right arm was struck off at the elbow and fell. It floated gently down, then came to rest on the cool grasses, its hand curved open in invitation.
Give him the other barrel, Shorty, and aim closer.
The crowd laughed and applauded. A brick smashed Mike's nose, and more rocks gave him a crown of blood.
The truth is simple, but the way of man is hard. First, you must learn to control yourself. The rest follows. Blessed is he who knows himself and commands himself, for the world is his, and love and happiness and peace walk with him wherever he goes.
Another shotgun blast was followed by 2 more shots. One short, a .45 slug, hit Mike over the heart, shattering the 6th rib near the sternum and making a large wound. The buckshot and the other slug sheared through his left tibia 5 inches below the patella and left the fibula sticking out at an angle, broken and white against the yellow and red of the wound. Mike staggered slightly and laughed, went on talking, his words clear and unhurried.
Thou art God. Know that, and the way is opened.
God damn it, let's stop this taking of the name of the Lord in vain. Come on, men, let's finish him.
The mob surged forward, led by one bold with a club. They were on him with rocks and fists, and then with feet as he went down. He went on talking while they kicked his ribs in and smashed his golden body, broke his bones, and tore an ear loose. At last, someone called out, "Back away so we can get the gasoline on him!" The mob opened up a little at that warning, and the camera zoomed to pick up his face and shoulders. The man from Mars smiled at his brothers, said once more, softly and clearly,
"I love you."
An incautious grasshopper came whirring to a landing on the grass a few inches from his face. Mike turned his head, looked at it as it stared back at him.
"Thou art God,"
he said happily, and discorporated. Chapter 38. Flame and billowing smoke came up and filled the tank.
"Golly," Patty said reverently, "that's the best blow-off ever used."
"Yes," agreed Becky judicially. "The professor himself never dreamed up a better one." Van Tromp said very quietly, apparently to himself,
"In style. Smart and with style. The lad finished in style."
Chuba looked around at his brothers. Was he the only one who felt anything? Jill and Dawn were seated, each with an arm around the other, but they did that whenever they were together. Neither seemed disturbed. Even Dorcas was dry-eyed and calm. The inferno in the tank cut to smiling Happy Holiday, who said,
"And now, folks, a few moments for our friends at Elysian Fields, who so graciously gave up their..."
Patty cut him off.
"Anne and Duke are on their way back up," she said. "I'll let them to the foyer, and then we'll have lunch."
She started to leave. Jubal stopped her.
"Patty, did you know what Mike was going to do?"
She seemed puzzled.
"Huh? Why, of course not, Jubal. It was necessary to wait for fullness. None of us knew."
She turned and left.
"Jubal."
Jill was looking at him.
"Jubal, our beloved father, please stop and grok the fullness. Mike is not dead. How can he be dead when no one can be killed? Nor can he ever be away from us who have already grokked him. Thou art God."
"Thou art God,"
he repeated dully.
"That's better. Come and sit with Dawn and me, in the middle."
"No. No, just let me be."
He went blindly to his own room, let himself in and bolted the door after him, leaned heavily with both hands, gripping the foot of the bed.
"My son, oh, my son, would that I had died for thee."
He had had so much to live for, and an old fool that he respected too much had to shoot off his yap and goad him into a needless, useless martyrdom. If Mike had given them something big, like stereo or bingo, but he gave them the truth, or a piece of the truth, and who is interested in truth? He laughed through his sobs. After a while, he shut them off, both heartbroken sobs and bitter laugh, and pawed through his travel bag. He had what he wanted with him. He had kept a supply in his toilet kit ever since Joe Douglas's stroke had reminded him that all flesh is grass. Now his own stroke had come, and he couldn't take it. He prescribed 3 tablets to make it fast and certain, washed them down with water, and lay quickly on the bed. Shortly, the pain went away. From a great distance, the voice reached him.
"Jubal, I'm resting. Don't bother me. Jubal, please, father." "Yes, Mike. What is it?"
"Wake up. Fullness is not yet. Here, let me help you." Jubal sighed.
"Okay, Mike."
He let himself be helped and led into the bath, let his head be held while he threw up, accepted a glass of water and rinsed out his mouth.
"Okay now?" "Okay, son. Thanks. Then I've got some things to attend to."
"I love you, father.
Thou art God." "I love you, Mike. Thou art God."
Jubal puttered around a while longer, making himself presentable, changing clothes, taking 1 short brandy to kill the slightly bitter taste still in his stomach, then went out to join the others. Patty was alone in the room with the babble tank, and it was switched off. She looked up.
Some lunch now, Jubal?
Yes, thanks.
She came up to him. That's good. I'm afraid most of them simply ate and scooted, but each of them left a kiss for you. And here it is, all in one package. She managed to deliver in full all the love placed in her proxy, cemented together with her own. Jubal found that it left him feeling strong, with her serene acceptance shared. No bitterness left. Come out into the kitchen, she said. Tony's gone, so most of the rest are there. Not that his growls ever really chased anybody out. She stopped and tried to stare down the back of her neck. Isn't that final scene changing a little? Sort of smoky, maybe? Jubal solemnly agreed that he thought it was. He couldn't see any change, but he was not going to argue with Patty's idiosyncrasy. She nodded. I expected it. I can see around me all right. Except myself. I still need a double mirror to see my back clearly. Mike says my sight will include that presently. No matter. In the kitchen, perhaps a dozen were lounging at a table and elsewhere. Duke was at the range, stirring a small saucepan.
Hi, boss. I ordered a 20-place bus. That's the biggest that can land in our little landing flat. And we'll need one almost that big, what with the diaper set and Patty's pets. Okay?
Certainly. Are they all coming home?
If they ran out of bedrooms, the girls could make up dosses that would do in the living room and here and there. And this crowd would probably double up anyhow. Come to think of it, he might not be allowed to sleep solo himself. He made up his mind not to fight it. It was friendly to have a warm body on the other side of the bed, even if your intentions weren't active. By God, he had forgotten how friendly it was. Growing closer.
Not everybody. Tim will pilot us, then turn in the bus and go to Texas for a while. The skipper and Beatrix and Sven, we're going to drop off in New Jersey.
Sam looked up from the table.
Ruth and I have got to get back to our kids, and Saul is coming with us.
Can't you stop by home for a day or two first?
Well, maybe. I'll talk it over with Ruth.
Boss, put in Duke, how soon can we fill the swimming pool?
Well, we never filled it earlier than April before, but with the new heaters, I suppose we could fill it any time.
Jubal added,
but we'll still have some nasty weather. Snow was still on the ground yesterday.
Boss, let me clue you. This gang can walk through snow hip-deep on a tall giraffe and not notice it.
And will, to swim. Besides that, there are cheaper ways of keeping that water from freezing than with those big oil heaters.
Jubal?
Yes, Ruth?
We'll stop for a day, or maybe more. The kids don't miss me, and I'm not aching to take over being motherly without Patty to discipline them anyhow.
Jubal, you've never really seen me until you've seen me with my hair floating around me in the water, looking like Mrs. Do-as-you-would-be-done-by.
It's a date. Say, where's the squarehead and the Dutchman? Beatrix has never been home. They can't be in such a hurry.
I'll tell him, boss.
Patty, can your snake stand a clean, warm basement for a while? Until we can do better. I don't mean honey bun, she's people. But I don't think the cobra should have the run of the house.
Of course, Jubal.
Jubal looked around.
Dawn, can you take shorthand?
She doesn't need it, put in Anne, any more than I do.
I should have known. Use typewriter?
I will learn if you wish it, Dawn answered.
Consider yourself hired, until there's a vacancy for a high priestess somewhere. Jill, have we forgotten anybody?
No, boss. Except that all those who left feel free to camp on you any time, too, and they will.
I assume that. Nest number two, when and as needed.
He went over to the range, glanced into the pan Duke was stirring. It held a small amount of broth.
Mike?
Yep.
Duke dipped out a little in the spoon, tasted it.
Needs a little salt?
Yes, Mike always did need a little seasoning.
Jubal took the spoon and tasted the broth. Duke was correct. The flavor was sweet and could have used salt.
But let's grok him as he is. Who's left to share?
Just you. Tony left me here with strict instructions to stir by hand, add water as needed, and wait for you. Not to let it scorch.
Then grab a couple of cups. We'll share it and grok together.
Right, boss.
Two cups came sailing down and rested by the saucepan.
This is a joke on Mike. He always swore that he would outlive me and serve me up for Thanksgiving. Or maybe the joke's on me. Because we had a bet on it, and now I can't collect.
You won only by default. Split it evenly.
Duke did so.
Jubal raised his cup.
Share. Grow ever closer. Slowly they drank the broth, stretching it out, savoring it, praising and cherishing and grokking their donor.
Jubal found, to his surprise, that although he was overflowing with emotion, it was a calm happiness that did not bring tears. What a quaint and gawky puppy his son had been when first he saw him, so eager to please, so naive in his little mistakes. And what a proud power he had become, without ever losing his angelic innocence.
I grok you at last, son, and would not change a line.
Paddy had his lunch waiting for him. He sat down and dug in, hungry and feeling that it had been days since breakfast. Sam was saying,
I was telling Saul that I grok no need to make any change in plans. We go on as before. If you've got the right merchandise, the business grows, even though the founder has passed on.
I wasn't disagreeing, Saul objected. You and Ruth will found another temple, and we'll found others, but we'll have to take time now to accumulate capital. This isn't a street corner revival, nor yet something to set up in a vacant shop. It requires staging and equipment. That means money, not to mention such things as paying for a year or two on Mars for Stinky and Merriam, and that's just as essential.
All right, already, who's arguing? We wait for fullness and go ahead.
Jubal said suddenly,
Money is no problem.
How's that, Jubal?
As a lawyer, I shouldn't tell this, but as a water brother, I do what I grok. Just a moment.
Ann?
Yes, boss?
By that spot, the one where the stone Mike, better get about 100-foot radius around it.
Boss, the spot itself is a public parkway. 100-foot radius will cut off some public road and a piece of the hotel grounds.
Don't argue.
I wasn't arguing. I was giving you facts.
Sorry. They'll sell. They'll reroute that route. Hell, if their arms are twisted properly, they'll donate the land. Twisting done through Joe Douglas, I think. And have Douglas claim from the morgue whatever's left when those ghouls got through with him, and we'll bury him on that spot. Say a year from now, with the whole city mourning and the cops that didn't protect him today standing at attention.
What to put over him? The fallen caryatid?
No, Mike had been strong enough for his stone.
The Little Mermaid would be better, but it wouldn't be understood. Maybe one of Mike himself, just as he was when he said, Look at me, I am a son of man. If Duke didn't catch a shot of it, New World did. And maybe there was a brother, or would be a brother, with the spark of Rodin in him to do it right and not fancy it up.
We'll bury him there, Jubal went on, unprotected, and let the worms and the gentle rain grok him. A grok Mike will like that. Ann, I want to talk to Joe Douglas as soon as we get home.
Yes, boss. We grok with you.
Now, about that other.
He told them about Mike's will.
So you see, each one of you is at least a millionaire. Just how much more than that, I haven't estimated lately. But much more, even after taxes. No strings on it at all. But I grok that you will spend as needed for temples and similar stuff. But there's nothing to stop you from buying yachts, if you wish. Oh, yes, Joe Douglas stays on as manager for any who care to let the capital ride. Same pay as before. But I grok Joe won't last long, whereupon management devolves on Ben Caxton.
Ben?
Caxton shrugged.
It can be in my name. I grok I'll hire me a real businessman. Name is Saul.
That wraps it, then. Some waiting time, but nobody will dare really fight this will. Mike rigged it, you'll see. How soon can we get out of here? Is the tab settled?
Jubal, Ben said gently, we own this hotel. Not long thereafter, they were in the air, with no trouble from police. The town had quieted down as fast as it had flared up. Jubal sat forward with Stinky Mahmood and relaxed, discovered that he was not tired, not unhappy, not even fretting to get back to his sanctuary. They discussed Mahmood's plan to go to Mars to learn the language more deeply. After, Jubal was pleased to learn, completing the dictionary, which Mahmood estimated at a year for his own part in checking the phonetic spellings. Jubal said grumpily,
I suppose I shall be forced to learn the pesky stuff myself, just understand the chatter around me.
As you grok, brother.
Well, damn it, I won't put up with assigned lessons and regular school hours. I'll work as suits me, just as I always have.
Mahmood was silent a moment.
Jubal, we used classes and schedules at the temple because we were handling groups. But some got special attention.
That's what I'm going to need.
Anne, for example, is much, much farther along than she ever let you know. With her total recall memory, she learned Martian in nothing flat, hooked in rapport with Mike.
Well, I don't have that sort of memory. And Mike's not available.
No, but Anne is. And stubborn as you are, nevertheless, Dawn can place you in rapport with Anne, if you'll let her. And you won't need Dawn for the second lesson. Anne will then be able to handle it all. You'll be thinking in Martian inside of days, by the calendar, much longer by subjective time. But who cares?
Mahmood leered at him.
You'll enjoy the warming-up exercises.
Jubal bristled. You're a low, evil, lecherous Arab. And besides that, you stole one of my best secretaries.
For which I am forever in your debt. But you haven't lost her entirely. She'll give you lessons, too. She'll insist on it.
Go away and find another seat. I want to think.
Somewhat later, Jubal shouted.
Front!
Dorcas came forward and sat down beside him, steno gear ready. He glanced at her before he started to work.
Child, you look even happier than usual. Glowing.
Dorcas said dreamily, I've decided to name him Dennis. Jubal nodded.
Appropriate. Very appropriate.
Appropriate meaning, even if she were mixed up about the paternity, he thought to himself.
Do you feel like working?
Oh, yes, I feel grand.
Begin. Stereo play, rough draft, working title, A Martian Named Smith. Open up, zoom in on Mars using stock of bones-tailed shots, unbroken sequence, then dissolving to miniature-matched set of actual landing place Vonvoy. Spaceship in middle distance. Animated Martians, typical, with stock as available or rephotographed. Cut to close. Interior spaceship. Female patient stretched on.
Chapter 39. The last chapter. The verdict to be passed on the third planet around Sol was never in doubt. The old ones of the fourth planet were not omniscient, and in their way were as provincial as humans, grokking by their own local values, even with the aid of vastly superior logic. They were certain in time to perceive an incurable wrongness in the busy, restless, quarrelsome beings of the third planet, a wrongness which would require weeding, once it had been grokked and cherished and hated. But by the time they would slowly get around to it would be highly improbable, approaching impossible, that the old ones would be able to destroy this weirdly complex race. The hazard was so slight that those concerned with the third planet did not waste a split eon on it. Certainly Foster did not.
Digby!
His assistant looked up.
Yes, Foster.
I'll be gone a few eons on a special assignment. Want you to meet your new supervisor. Foster turned and said, Mike, this is Archangel Digby, your assistant. He knows where everything is around the studio, and you'll find him a very steady straw boss for anything you conceive.
Oh, we'll get along.
Archangel Michael assured him, and said to Digby,
Haven't we met before?
Digby answered,
Not that I remember.
Of course, out of so many when-wheres. He shrugged.
No matter. Thou art God.
Thou art God, Digby responded. Foster said, Skip the formalities, please. I've left you a load of work, and you don't have all eternity to fiddle with it. Certainly thou art God, but who isn't? He left. And Mike pushed back his halo and got to work. He could see a lot of changes he wanted to make.
Copyright 1961 by Robert A. Heinlein. This unabridged recording of the reading of Stranger in a Strange Land was published by arrangement with Spectrum Literary Agency and was produced in 1996 by Blackstone Audiobooks Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audiobooks.